This is the Conference Committee on Malpractice, meeting in room 14 on June 11, 1974.
That's the end of that.
Yes, sir.
Conference Committee on House Bill 2647, come to order, please. Legislative Council prepared amendments.
Can I ask a question? Thank you. That's the amendments that we had yesterday. Where's Joe? Did that include the Kaiser?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
They were incorporated into the amendments.
Can you have a set?
Oh, let's see. Maybe these are set.
Do you want to ask you any questions about them?
Well, is this the same set we got yesterday?
No, I think this is the one that speaks to the differences in the classes.
I prepared these amendments yesterday, and they do include the breakdown into the various classes that the committee discussed yesterday.
Let me ask you a question, Joe.
Chairman.
Yes, sir. Yes, Senator Smith.
At least one lawyer has given an opinion that because we have classified the coverage, that if you're injured by a physician in Class 1, you can go up to $100,000 in your primary claim. And if you're injured by a neurosurgeon in Class 6, you can go up to $500,000. Because we've limited, should the funds become defunct, we've limited the payments even to a prorate. This whole thing may be unconstitutional, depriving the person at the $100,000 level of the coverage that the person that at the $500,000 level might have. You wish to comment on that? I realize it's off the top of your head.
Well, I have great respect for the power of the Legislative Assembly to make classifications. I think as long as the classifications they make are reasonable, there can be no constitutional argument raised, except if you're dealing with fundamental rights, and we don't have Supreme Court decisions that say in the matter of malpractice insurance we're dealing with fundamental rights. The question will not even arise unless and until the fund becomes depleted or defunct. If there is sufficient monies in the fund, an injured plaintiff, no matter who his doctor is, will be able to recover the total amount of his award. If the fund does become depleted, then in fact some plaintiffs may be in a poorer position than others, but that is a question that lies in the future. If the committee has put in enough safeguards to keep the fund intact for a period of years, perhaps by then the legislature will have more experience with the concept, and we'll be able to take care of this potentially, and I assert that it's only a potential constitutional problem in the application of the statute. I don't think anyone can assert that the statute is unconstitutional on its face.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Cooney with respect to that statement.
My concern is that the victim that's injured by the general practitioner and gets $1 million judgment is treated differently than the victim that's injured by the neurosurgeon, in that the GP victim would get $100,000 forthwith, and the neurosurgeon victim would get $500,000 forthwith. And the GP victim then has to collect his $400,000, the difference between the coverages, at a 10% per annum over 5 years, whereas the a neurosurgeon victim only has to get the amount over $500,000 at 10%. The GP victim has a greater amount subject to the payment on a percentage basis, and also a greater amount subject to proration.
But he gets it, and he could get it if the
he
fund
could.
Is not defunct.
He could.
Do you think that's sufficient to call the whole program unconstitutional when the claimant is going to get it? It's just a question of in what increments.
It's my fear, and a constitutional question is very difficult to decide, you know, overnight.
Yeah.
It's my fear that is a classification that is based upon the category of the physician, and that we're treating claimants differently without justification of classification. I see nothing wrong with classifying the doctor's contributions on a risk category, but I don't think that carries over to the claimant.
Ken,
what's
the
I think it has the same effect. Okay,
so we'll recess until the senator's return. Okay. Conference Committee 12647 in session again. The record will show all members are present. Mr. Cooney's on the telephone. I think he'll be here. Wanted to explore that
yeah.
one matter
right
further, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I've taken the liberty since I think this is a very crucial question to this bill, I've taken the liberty of sending the amendments to the Attorney General, and he should have them now, and he's looking them over on this very point. So if we can have some direction so we know where we are, then it will help, I think, in making a decision. So that is forthcoming.
Any indication of what the time frame is?
Well, he said he was going to work on it right away.
Well, can I, while we're here,
yeah.
Senator
Roberts.
Tom, what's your proposal in the event that this thing that we've been talking about comes
well,
out negative?
My alternative idea was as if this gradation of coverage is unconstitutional, then to make coverage uniform, you know, something like $200,000.
Out what that, and then what about
the
pool?
I'd leave the pool as it is.
At 500 per doctor?
No. The gradations for the doctor's contribution to the pool, I think, is all right.
All right. What then is written into here?
Yes. And what you're doing, then, is from the area of the GP, you're increasing the coverage, but then the problem that you have is you're dropping the class 6 coverage. Yeah, everybody's $200,000, it's uniform. And then that increases the risk to the pool for the neurosurgeons. But it answers the question of treating the claimants equally.
Now, how did you arrive at $200,000?
Trying to see the problem that we were trying to accomplish was with this feature was the rural general practitioner in class 1 who carries 300. And there's 134 doctors in that category. And in trying to shove it down to 100 for them, we were only going to increase their premium by the amount that they had to contribute to the fund, which was $150. Now, if I increase it to $200,000 for those fellows, I'm increasing them more than the $150 contribution. And increasing their additional premium by about 20% probably.
Well, you were just really trying to reach a figure that kept the premiums at a reasonable.
Yes. Because the higher we push the coverage level, the more increase we make the premium, which is one of the things that is in controversy. From the physician's standpoint, the bill that we have before us now is good. And the only reason I backed off was my concern about the constitutional question. Joe and I, at the half here, were talking, and he pointed out an idea that maybe I hadn't thought of. He pointed out that there is a basis, perhaps, of classifying the claimants by the type of doctor they go to because of the degrees of risk that the patient is encountering when he goes to a neurosurgeon for a surgical treatment, as opposed to when he's treating with a GP, that maybe when you're seeking solutions to a neurological problem, maybe you're necessarily, as a claimant, in a higher class category also. And when you're seeking the remedy that is available at the hands of a general practitioner, maybe you are not encountering the same type of risk unless he starts doing brain surgery, but our classification protects from that. He can't do that being class one. And he's a non-surgical practitioner, class one. So when he's going to a class one doctor, he's going for a treatment that does not involve the high degree of risk, what Joe is saying, wasn't that essentially it? And therefore he's not encountering as great a risk, and therefore maybe a basis for classification. I would be pleased to have the counsel of the Attorney General on it because I'm sure they're a little bit more tuned in to daily constitutional questions than perhaps we are.
I would suggest that perhaps we can agree on the concept of the proposed amendments and then perhaps agree as an alternative if there is a ruling from the Attorney General with respect to that this is unconstitutional, agree on an alternative as to the then uniform limit which would place on the physicians, and move forward that much at least, so as soon as the opinion is available, we'll be able to take final action on it. Is there? Does that sound reasonable?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Joe, I briefed Lee on the telephone about these amendments.
Yes, sir.
His concern was that we are tying the classifications to an insurance company classifications. He recommended that the insurance commissioner be given the authority to provide classifications based upon insurance company experience factors. He was concerned that when we say physicians of class one and two, we are depending upon an insurance company classification. He was concerned about that, saying that the authority for the classification ought to rest with the insurance commissioner, but it could be based, of course, upon the factors that the insurance companies have developed.
I think that would be a more telling argument if the statute simply said classes 1 through 6 and left it at that, and by implication adopted the insurance company's classes, or if the statute allowed the insurance company to determine the classes. But in section 13 of the Act, the Legislative Assembly is making its own classification if it enacts this statute, and the Legislative Assembly can draw on a number of sources any sources it deems reliable or dependable in making such classifications. So if the Legislative Assembly enacts this, then the Legislative Assembly is telling the courts.
Oh, you've defined these classifications.
And the world, yes.
Okay, I see. And where did you get these definitions, Joe?
From the OMA CNA professional liability insurance rates chart that Mr. Cooney provided me. They are, for the most part, the classifications as established by the private insurance industries. And that raises perhaps the wisdom of having the Legislative Assembly depend on the insurance industry for making its classification.
Well, I think you've taken care of it.
But the court is not going to...
All right, I didn't realize that. I think you've taken care of it. I didn't read this, and I think you answered the point directly.
All right, are there further questions?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Dr. Terry a question. Because he's...
Senator Roberts, Dr. Terry.
Yesterday that we ought to consider a set amount for all the doctors in the school rather than the graduated line. I didn't really have an opportunity to discuss it with him to find out why.
Well, my feeling is that on the pay scale or the premium scale that you have before you, class one is over six, or class six is over six times class one, and the protection that you are proposing is $1,000 or $100,000 for class one, and for class six is $500,000, and that. Really, there's not that much difference in them, and you give then you give another big favor to class one by having a minimal amount and a much greater amount for class six. And it actually, and if you look at the last line with the approximate rate of $500,000 plus $500, there is still a big differential. The differential is from $1,900 to $9,000, and if you do it the other way, it makes that differential even greater than is shown here. I just think that you're giving every single advantage to the lower ones that aren't very expensive anyhow. And the argument that is used that young people coming in or old people going out was used once as a general practitioner. That just affects everyone. And, there's no difference one over the other.
And going back to the 500, it would build up that fund.
What this does, it relieves those that don't have very much anyhow. Penalizes worse those that are hit very severely. I think, if anything, that just having them even would be much more fair. You could put an argument for it the other way, but I would settle for you.
Any other questions? Are you ready to add some concept? Senator Smith moves the adoption of the proposed amendments to see engrossed House Bill 2647, Legislative Council Data 61175, consisting of 13 pages, with the understanding that in the event of an adverse ruling from the Attorney General, that we will then reconsider. Discussion.
This is the proposal of the 100, 300, 500, and it is the proposal of 150, 450, and 750. Is that correct?
Correct.
So now it's, if the AG has some concerns, then we have to reconsider. If he does not, then this is the final action.
That was my proposal, sir.
That's all right.
Okay.
Clerk will call call the roll.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Representative Stoltz?
Aye.
Representative Magruder?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Aye.
Okay, carried and so ordered. The chair will move the adoption of proposed amendments to C. Engrossed House Bill 2647, prepared by Legislative Council, dated 6/11/75. One page relates to the limitation of attorney's fees at 33% of monies awarded to plaintiff.
Go through that one again.
It's there, Betty, with your package. Maybe at the bottom of your original amendments.
On which page?
That's good. No, it's a separate amendment. One page.
This one? No. That's not.
No.
That's something else. Oh, okay. It's the same amendment.
I think so.
You don't need to call it.
Senator Roberts objects. Going to, unless you want to discuss it further, going to, if the verdict of the committee is an impasse.
I would hope that the committee could move this bill out and leave the attorney's fees out, and that we could declare that the committee has unanimously worked on this bill and has unanimously agreed on an insurance program for the doctors. And I don't believe that this one amendment should hang up the work of this committee.
Well, there are three of us on the committee who don't feel that it should be hung up
either. But that's not the accurate interpretation of the way the conference committee works. We are a committee. You two are a committee. Understanding, and I talked with Bob about this, and frankly, talked with him about dropping the attorney's fees provisions and working on this particular proposal. I thought that Mr. Smith and I reached an agreement on that.
We did.
But how do you vote then on the attorney's fees?
No one asked me.
Okay.
What is your position, Senator Smith?
Well, my concern, Mr. Chairman, is that, first of all, I think we have to have a bill. I, as you know, feel very strongly about the question of contingency fees, and I think it's it's an injustice to have any law firm charging more than 33 1/3%, up to 50%, even though it goes to the Supreme Court. And I think it's well-founded because the leading plaintiff's firm in this state does not charge more than 33 1/3% on any judgment. And I think it's unfortunate that we cannot find a method to restrain those eager, sometimes, attorneys who, in my opinion, take advantage of people by overcharging. Certainly, that's not an indictment of the law profession. That's that happens. However, I believe that this is an excellent and a unique package. And what it does, especially in my particular interest, it reduces from the existing rates the premiums paid by general practitioners whom serve the rural areas of the state and who are facing the people every day. And because of that only, I think that this package ought to move and survive, and I would back away from my other concern, which is collateral with this whole thing, regarding the contingency fee, to see the package fly. And I think it's unfortunate we can't do something about it, but obviously we can't. That doesn't mean that in the future there can't be opportunities to correct that problem.
There's been a great deal of publicity over the years, which has attributed to some of the cause of increasing costs of malpractice insurance to the contingent fee system. Rightfully or wrongfully, the public has accepted that publicity, I believe, and the indication to me is that we have a duty to protect the legal profession in connection with this matter, the same as we have had a duty to protect the doctors and to protect the patients. And I think that this situation requires some expression on the part of this committee and on the part of the legislature to allay the fears of the general public, even though they may not be well-founded, that in all instances excessive fees are being charged.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me make my statement on why I oppose it, because I simply have without stating exactly why. In spite of the fact that some of the major firms do not charge more, and in some cases not as much as this would allow them to charge, there are those situations in which certainly an attorney may take a malpractice case that is exceedingly difficult. And this would provide that the attorney and his client could reach an agreement that one-third would be charged upon settlement. And if this would encourage, then it would seem to me, the attorneys to settle, because there would be no point in going to trial and spending all that time preparing for trial and wasting all the time of the attorney if, in fact, he was not going to receive any more court. So my position is that if you limit the attorney-client relationship and what they can agree upon, regardless of what it is, that you're locking the courthouse door to the person who should have a trial. The attorney has no alternative but to say, I advise you to settle, because the preparation of this thing is going to cost money. And we are going to have to come out of your pocket in order for us to go to trial. And because we've agreed upon this, and I frankly think it's in the interest of the person who is the potential victim that he and his attorney work out the kinds of contractual arrangements, the value given by that attorney. And the Oregon State Bar has statistics after statistics showing that in personal injury cases, all sorts, that where the claimant has an attorney, that a claimant, after paying the attorney's fees, ends up with greater awards than those individuals who have not hired an attorney. And so there is no doubt that the services of an attorney do benefit the claimant. And that claimant then recovers more than that turn than they would have recovered without the services of the attorney. And I believe it's in the interest of the claimant not to limit.
I'd like to suggest that we recess for about 15 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I heard a leading barrister in this country make the suggestion regarding the contingency fee problem that the contingency fee might be left, but he thought that there ought to be a penalty for frivolous claims before the court, and should the attorney not be able to make a prima facie case, he ought to be penalized. Now, that's not a bad idea.
I don't know that it fits into the concept of this bill.
It certainly takes care of attorneys that don't investigate the cases very well, so it
do. Yes, I do that. Suggestion of Representative McGruder, I'm going to recess.
Well, now, how long is it going to take me? Because we better.
I'll call him now and I'll find out.
We'll recess until we get information.
I'm willing to anything that's desirable.
That's
but
fine.
Recess
if you can get
sort.
An idea, then we can reconvene.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
When that information is available. The Conference Committee on House Bill 2647 is recessed until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Conference Committee on 2647, please come to order. The record show all conferees are present. The Attorney General is here. We'd like to hear from him in connection with one of our proposals.
Chairman, we have reviewed the amendments contained in, I guess it's the proposed Conference Committee report. Senator Smith called me and asked me that. Was there any constitutional question? And we see no problem with these amendments. I think basically relying on the reasoning in the letter we sent to Representative Frohmeyer and Senator Roberts before. It's certainly a reason. I understand the question was raised over differentiating between different classes of doctors. That's a perfectly reasonable classification to make as far as. As a matter of legislative judgment, I'm sure any court is going to hold us to reasonable classification, so I can't say any 14th Amendment problem. Glad to answer any questions.
Questions from the Attorney General? Thank you.
Well, that was a fast piece of research. And
we were still tasting and reading the bill at the same time.
Did you cite any cases or anything? Feel comfortable about
this? The Attorney General
testified
in that fashion before our committees on his bill.
That's why we asked for an opinion.
I would put it this way, Senator Roberts. I'm willing to stake my own professional reputation and that of my office.
And if it's challenged in court, and we lose, you'll resign?
Can we lose?
Well, by that time, my term will probably be up.
Okay, well, I think. We adopted the amendments in concept, and perhaps we should have a motion to officially adopt them.
Absolutely.
Okay. Senator Roberts moves that we adopt the amendments which were adopted in concept, subject to the Attorney General's opinion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Stoltz, or pardon me, Representative Stoltz.
Thank you.
Representative Magruder.
Aye.
Senator Roberts.
I will.
Carried and so ordered. Monday McGuire, Senators, whether there's any change in opinion in respect to the contingent fee proposal that I made this morning.
Well, I'd like to make a proposal, Stoltz, and that is that. Since it seemed, I'm not going to hang up this bill, but I think on this issue, but it seems to me that I think you people should have taken that position a long time ago and receded from your position. I wonder if we might amend your motion to read that the attorney's fees would be limited to one-third at the point that the award reaches into the excess liability. So that there, any of this fund that is there, that the would be a guarantee that the limitation would be placed on the attorney's fees. So when you get down
to. I was trying to think of the effect of it. It wouldn't make any difference on the fund itself.
You're still going to count the award, but what you're going to do is that more of it is going to go to the claimant. And if this is your philosophy, that if it's gone all the way through the Supreme Court, then the percentage that the attorney gets, he can only take that percentage out of whatever is self-insured. But anything that goes into the, anything that over that that comes out of the excess liability fund would be limited. So that anything comes out of there, one-third, if there is an excess.
So they'll be able to reach any kind of contingency agreement on the initial amount of what comes out?
Where they're self-insured. but if
or it'd be 100,000, 300,000, 500,000.
Right. That's up to their contractual arrangement. If it goes over that, goes into the fund, then the attorney's fees would be limited.
Comments on the proposal?
I really like the other proposal. This doesn't bother me too much.
I certainly want to get a bill, and I want to get one today. As right now, I'm not certain that that's necessarily completely speaks to the problem about which I was concerned.
Well, but it says we're concerned about how much the victim's going to get, and we're trying to cover over the amount to protect the doctors, and so we're going to protect the victim by in that same principle.
Well, Betty, I just have a question about how it would work in the contract with the client.
This would have to be subject to review by the insurance commissioner, or because at that point, when the insurance commissioner becomes involved in paying out, the attorney would have to report what has been paid out of already the self-insurance. And how and what the allotment would be for anything beyond that. So I think the insurance commissioner would have to be the watchdog on the payout.
Well, what you're doing is eliminating Mr. Cooney's opportunity to go into the fund.
No. You mean Mr. Cooney as a defense lawyer?
I mean, Mr. Noble. He doesn't take more than a third, right?
He takes no more than a third anyway.
Under this, as I understand your proposal, there would be no limit to have a 50 or 80 or whatever he wants contingency fee.
Whatever.
Maybe you'd be unconscionable. I'm sure he could get sued for
malpractice. Whatever it is. He sets the contractual agreement between the lawyer and his client on the 100 or 300
on the
or 500.
Self-insured amount.
And a 33 1/3% limit on any recovery
of insurance. And in a sense, that's kind of putting into operation the theory that we've talked about, and that is that the higher the award, the less it should get. So the higher the award, if it gets into that, then it drops back down to what he would get if he hadn't gone to trial, but had filed a complaint. So it prevents the high, it prevents them dipping into the higher award to the 40 and 50% level. And if you want, I think a third is reasonable at that level.
Did you start to say that that percentage was negotiable?
Well, yeah, I think it is. I think a third is reasonable because we're talking about how much a lawyer gets just simply to file the complaint. And if it's settled after there's been the negotiation and so on, that's what they get. And so even if they've gone through a total trial and appeal and everything else, we're saying that's what they would get if it gets a higher award.
There's no way.
30% or 28% or somewhere along the line, that's agreeable to me.
Am I correct in saying that there is no way that a claimant is going to get into the secondary coverage without going to court? There's no authority for settlements to be made.
Sure, there is.
There's a possibility, but it'd be most unusual. That any insurance company would sell. Well, in the 100,000 category, yes. Yes, it certainly would seem to me that there would be settlements over 100,000, but probably not. I don't even have to ask people who are handling this what level do they
I wasn't able to hear the last part.
okay, question to both you and Dick. What, at what level do you, about what is the highest level that you would settle or turn down and go into court? And can you say that that every case order that you never settle for $300,000 is going to have to be tried?
No. The way it'll work is if it's a case that that is one we're going to settle, and if the settlement is going to require more than the basic coverage that's available, then we will notify the insurance commissioner.
Yeah, but what's your practice? You're having cases all the time. Is there any kind of magic figure at which there's just absolutely no further negotiations? You say this is too much and we're going to go to court and let the jury decide.
Well, in a particular case, we may make a decision that that's as high as we're going to go to settle it. But that isn't a figure that's used in all cases.
Of course not. It's dependent upon the kind of case.
It depends on the liability. And if you figure that you're at fault and if the damage is horrendous, you're going to go up as high as you may feel that when you lose the chance to cut it down by trying it. And when we get into a situation where we're going to be settling a case that's greater than the underlying coverage, then we're going to have to have this notice and this approved settlement, and then the commissioner comes in and he participates as to whether or not he's going to agree that anything from that fund is going to be used to help settle it. And if he doesn't want to, then the case will be tried. But there is no point that, after $100,000, we're going to try it.
No limit other than the contractual. No limit on the contractual. Lawyer and his client.
At the point
of
the claim, then there's a
limit.
Does anybody have that thing? The jurors hand?
I don't know. Tom, do you have anything in the New Jersey formula?
I just want to know what they use at the top, over half a million.
It's 10% anything over 200,000.
It's 10% over 200,000.
But they tack on, see. It's tacking on things. So the first $1,000, you get 50%. Then anything over that, you get another percent. Anything over that, you get another percent. So you have to tack on each percent. You get a percent for this much, plus a percent for this much, plus a percent for this much. So if you just say 10% for anything over that, you got to tack on all this other to get the actual
percentage.
So just 10% at the top doesn't mean that that's all they get. Well, it means that you got to start at the beginning of the award and work this. Didn't you work it out that it came to about 40%, Tom?
When we had the 500,000 thing.
Right.
It was, under the New Jersey plan, the maximum attorney's fee was about $57,000.
About $57,000.
$57,000.
And what percent would that be?
500.
And
a little over
10%.
Over
10%. I thought you figured that out. That piece of paper sheet came out of the total award to be about 30%.
No, the total dollar award is the using the New Jersey scale on a $500,000 recovery was $57,000 or some odd dollars. I remember it was 50% of the first 1,000, and it was something in the next 2,000.
say liability.
Well, depending on what they're...
Well, the point is, if you've got 150 miles, you've got 30, that's 50, right?
No, because it's only covered for 100,000.
Now, I mean, with a third, that's the third basis. You go to your proposal with 40%, you go to court, that's 40,000, and then you go to 25% of 50, is...
12.5.
12.5, and it gets 52 against 50.
I don't have it.
52, as compared to 50. Well, I might not be doing a whole lot for me, but it sets, I think, the public policy that we're trying, that where they're self-insured and it's reaching into that pot, that it's not a matter of public policy, but when it reaches into the pot that we're trying to make them solve, it is a matter of public policy.
But we ought to eliminate these in the pot.
Can you excuse me for just one second?
Sure.
You guys can put this...
I just think that's probably a whole bunch, especially the $500,000 level. That's $200,000, or it could be $250,000. It's got a $750,000 judgment. You can go back and confirm for a quarter, $150,000. It doesn't really get up to velocity, if we're talking about.
Gives the injured patient a little more money out of the fund.
Let's see, we have the 47 amount. We took the 50 all the way. We'd be saving $75,000.
Can I find my substitute?
No, go right ahead. Just go right on.
I don't want to do it unless there's four votes.
I'll vote for it.
All right. Do you want to phrase the motion, Senator?
I'd move substitute. Well, no, we don't need to because we didn't adopt yet. I'd move that where's Joe? Have Joe draw up amendments that would conceptually put into this bill the provision that limits attorney's fees to 25% at the point that the claim is made on the excess liability fund.
That the award is made.
At the time, okay, I don't know how it's going to be said, but my intent is that where there is the self-insurance covers any claim, that there is no attorney fee limit. The point that the fund is dipped into, the attorney's fees over and above that amount, and limited to 25% of the fee.
Come up with some preliminary language. When an attorney represents a plaintiff in an action that results in a judgment, award, or settlement that is paid in part from the medical excess liability fund, the attorney shall not receive as part of his fee more than 25% of the monies paid to the plaintiff from the fund.
Okay, so that if the attorney chooses to take less, he can, but he will not be awarded more.
Will not receive more than. If $100,000 comes out of the fund, you can get no more than $25,000 of that money as part of the fee.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's the New Jersey thing. 50% of the first $1,000, 40% of the next $2,000, 33% of the next $47,000, 20% of the next $50,000. 10% of any amount in excess of 100 times. That's probably where we ought to be instead of 25%. Over that to 750 goes into the fund for 10%. The guy for $100,000, he can go up to 50,000 attorney fees. Supreme Court goes into the fund, he gets 10% above that.
Well, according to Stokes' proposal, if you limit it to 1/3, then he gets 1/3 of everything.
That's right.
It goes into 1/3 into the fund.
Stopping the 50% shot at the $100,000 level too. Now he can get that. That covers the front end. That covers the problem that you have pointed out. He's already taken the case to begin with. And this protects the fund at 10%.
I wonder if there's would be an inhibiting thing. This is, I guess, what bothers me as far as the lawyers are concerned, at the lower, at whatever bring this added level. And of course, their attorneys are going to look for the doctor who carries the highest liability for doctors to sue if there are more than, if there's more than one doctor involved. And obviously, go after one carrying more the highest liability.
I would inhibit the prayer. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure. No, I inhibit the opportunity of the victim to actually to get lawyer representation. That's what I'm concerned about, is that there's going to be lawyers available to represent the tough cases, and that that person who is the victim is going to have good representation because there is an incentive and a motive for the lawyer to take it. You see, what if you don't give them the incentive to do it, then they're just shut off. There's no lawyers to do it.
That's why we, the incentive is still there, it seems to me.
Incentive would be $10,000 and $100,000 recovery, about the proportionately less price, just the right 10%.
Yeah. Certainly, incentive would be there. So, you know, I don't. If you want to protect the fund, that's the way we ought to protect the fund. And protect the client as well.
You're protecting the fund by the 25%, because anything under this motion, anything negative third.
You don't really protect the fund in either event. You just protected more of the fund money goes
to the client.
To the claimant.
To the claimant, yeah.
But it doesn't change the amount of being recovered.
That's right, but with your just straight across one third that anything comes out of the fund is going to go to the attorney.
Yes.
Under this motion that I'm making, only a fourth of it.
That's right.
Well,
but
more.
It really doesn't protect the fund.
Or more on the front end.
But there's more. There may be. Probably would be up to a third at least.
A while ago, they look quarter. A lot of them do that.
Some do.
That's a recommended, that was the old recommended schedule. There's no recommended schedule.
It's an interesting trade.
I never got up for 25% shrink either.
I think we're out of our weight class. It's too cattle, man. Yeah. You want to pursue your matter?
Well, I don't. I don't know. I just don't think it does very much.
Well, it saves the fund a little money.
Saves the client. The claimant. Doesn't save the fund any money. Doesn't protect the fund at all.
That's right, because you can solve it. Worried about the public and whether or not the attorney's fees are getting overpaid, which I think is a red herring issue. Trying to find a scapegoat to please the public. I'd like to take away the insurance companies myself as a scapegoat.
Got another amendment?
Got any more line?
Just give me time and I'll think of one. Public policy of this legislature that we do not Well, I've made a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on the...
I'd like to amend it to 10%.
Senator Smith moves it, amended to 10% of the portion of the recovery over the primary coverage. Question on the...
I'll object.
Without calling her all, are you going to vote no?
Yeah, I would.
Senator Smith, I said making a motion.
I think it's too low.
I would vote yes.
It's too low for the work attorneys do.
The motion to amend fails for lack of unanimity. Senator Roberts has moved to... That was an original motion, wasn't it? It wasn't an amendment of 25. Which wants to limit the amount of attorney's fees to 25% of the excess of the primary coverage. Any objection?
Argue.
I'll move to limit to 50%.
Say that.
Total fee limit to 50% of primary coverage. I don't think you're going to get any votes today.
Maybe we could let the insurance commissioner look at the financial statement of the lawyer. He could set.
Could have a special commission.
Sliding scales.
Law professor is not going to bar.
I object.
I said this morning, I think when Howard Cherry wasn't here, that we might have to place doctors on contingency fees.
How about saying limit the doctor, or limit the attorney to what the doctor charges for the case?
Whoops.
Careful now.
Whoops.
Or five times what the doctor charges.
Would you go for five times?
You betcha.
Would you go for a limitation of five times?
No.
You know then, doctor, you'd get lobbied to increase your fees.
All the help we get.
Well, we're making no progress on that at the moment. Can you prepare, Joe, the concept for us without and leaving the figures blank? I'm sure you can.
On this last point?
No, on the original one, as we talked about originally, putting a limitation on the overage.
Yeah.
On the attorney's contingency.
Here's the verdict.
I've got some language here.
Yes. Okay. Just don't put any figures in it. I mean, and get it back to us. Okay.
All right.
All right.
40%.
We have a basis for some further discussion.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get us moving along somewhere. I endorse the concept of having something, and I'm suggesting that there be increased support for purposes of discussion on that. I'm looking at all the alternatives.
I understand why you do that.
Taking the water hole and all that sort of thing.
Is it your opinion, that, Patty, that that lawyers then will use that as a minimum fee?
I don't think so.
Well, that was your argument against the 33 1/3%.
No, my argument against the 33 1/3% was that is what it has been, that's what
except Posey.
That they...
Posey firm uses it all the way through.
Yeah, I don't care what Posey firm does.
They handle 80%.
They may handle 80% of it, but we're setting a policy here that for all attorneys, and I just asked Ed Bailey up in the lounge if he'd done any malpractice work, and he says, I take malpractice cases. He says, I am not an expert on malpractice, but when a malpractice case comes into my office, I take it. And he will take it. And he'll have to turn himself into an expert, or has, in probably in the narrow field that he's had to deal with. And so we're not talking about just about the Posey firm, we're talking about the whole idea of what all lawyers have to do. And I'm saying that some of the lawyers are going to say, I can take a third for settlement. That's been the recommended fee schedule, and they're still got in the habit of using that as a guideline. I can take that for settlement and not go to court. And so I just say to my client, sorry, there's no point in going to trial on this case, because that saves the attorney all the time of having to go and the risk. And so the incentive then isn't there, you see, to give them the offer to go on and trial. I basically, Bob, as you very well know, oppose putting anything in here about attorney's fees because it has any bearing whatsoever on giving the doctors adequate insurance. I think, I still think it is finger pointing and saying, you're the dirty dogs, you're the ones that's caused all this problem, it's your fee, and I just can't see putting lawyers in that kind of a public image.
You know, as you know, my problem is the people that I talk to are not in the bar, and they think that a third is unconscionable. So.
But the people who have suffered through it with the attorney and knows what the attorney does and how hard that attorney has worked doesn't come.
Certainly, my practice probably has a long ways from being a model. But on a contingency fee situation, and I've had many of them over the years, I make no distinction between the fee after filing and going on to trial. In other words, it's 33 and a third. And the reason, the compelling reason to me for doing that is to avoid the criticism that you're only taking this to trial because you're going to get an additional 6 2/3% out of the award. Accept the offer, I take a third of it. If you don't think the offer's fair, I'll try the case for you and I'll take a third of whatever I get. That way, I think, creates
but
a better relationship
with my client.
But doesn't
that encourage you to reach a settlement, rather even if you have to give a little bit, rather than do all the work necessary to go to trial? Because if you're going to go to trial and be adequately prepared, it's going to take you days and days and days.
But I think a 33 and a third of the settlement standpoint is high enough. You can afford to go ahead.
I suggest that Senator Smith and Senator Roberts each move 1 point. Senator Smith moving to 50 and Senator Roberts moving to 20. And then Representative Stoltz flips a coin.
Which is 50 and which is 20 for what?
Senator Roberts is a 25, Senator Smith at 10.
Well, you haven't heard my latest offer before you get to that. I'll go for 40 and 10.
40% of anything up of the
primary coverage.
Primary and 10% of that. No idea how that works out.
Well, on 100,000.
Don't ask me.
On 100,000, it would be $40,000 in fees. On 110,000, it would be 41.
If you get a $500,000 settlement on a $100,000 policy, what would that be?
No, it would be 10% of 400,000, which would be 40,000 plus 40, $80,000.
New Jersey gives you 57.
Thank you.
We're doing nothing but playing games with numbers.
We're playing games with claimants.
We're playing games with attorneys.
With claimants.
With somebody's money, I don't know whose it is, or what percent belongs to you.
Well, I still think it would be a greater thing to do to limit the attorney's fees in the excess liability fund, because even though people aren't paying into it, they're going to look at that as a government operated fund. But if you're not willing to accept that, then I'll go along with your original motion.
33 and a third.
I think the whole concept is an error. I think the whole putting this in this bill is an error. We're trying to do something to solve a problem that we shouldn't get.
All right. We have an agreement. Are you prepared? Well, we have the amendment to this act. Okay. And the chair again moves that we adopt the amendment with respect to contingent fees limiting to 33 and 130% of recovery. Call the roll.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Representative Stoltz?
Aye.
Jason better get nervous.
Representative Magruder?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Can we pass this out without my vote?
I'm afraid not. There's something in the rules that speaks to
that. Can I put a qualified vote in?
Maybe.
Explain your vote, I can. Maybe.
I heard that. An unqualified aye was an explanation if she wants to make it.
I made all my explanations.
All right, fine.
Take it out on the floor next time.
All right, we will prepare the committee report and to you for signature. Thank you all very
you
much.
You can run for this
Monday. Mr. Chairman,
try to get us afternoon. Okay, we are.